हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 6, chapter 1. Oh, this doesn't say the canto. Srila Jiva Goswami has given another reason for the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. He emphasizes that the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead should never be taken to be ordinary material activities, nor are the Lord's associates ordinary persons. Although Lord Krishna apparently incarnates within this world for some time and then goes away, it should be understood that the Supreme Lord is eternally situated with his entourage in his various abodes in the spiritual sky, such as Sri Gokula, Mathura, and Dwarka. The members of the Yadu dynasty are eternal associates of the Lord, and therefore they cannot bear to be separated from the Lord. Since Krishna was preparing to give up his earthly pastimes, if he were to leave the Yadu dynasty on earth, they would surely become so disturbed by his absence that in their highly agitated state of mind, they would trample and destroy the earth. Therefore, Krishna arranged the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty prior to his own disappearance, right? So even though they're talking about that they would be a disturbance, it's not a disturbance like the mundane, right? It's not that the mundane, these great kings and all that with their armies is due to their pride, right? Because they'll want to establish themselves, prove themselves, fight with each other. Like this, they'll give trouble to the general populace. But here he's meaning that they would be so disturbed by their separation from Krishna that they could create some disturbance, right? They are kings. They are like this. So, therefore, then, they leave before him. Like you see with Brahma Haridas. He asked Lord Chaitanya that he leaves first.
Yes.
Like that. So that's an insight. From the outside, then you see, okay, he's removed the burden of the earth. So then he also wants to remove them. But that's only because he wants to take them with him. Okay. Yes.
So can we say there are different Yadavas as we said before? Some are demigods, some are eternal associates.
Well, but through the pastimes, because this will be the end of the pastimes, then generally speaking you would say as those who had come into the pastimes, then they would have come up to the standard. And now they would be counted among the eternal associates. Though in that particular pastime, then it's only specific ones generally would come to bring the new group up. Does that make sense? But once that others, they come up to the standard, then when everybody goes back to the into his various abodes, those others would stay, and the eternal associates would come with the Lord again and bring a new batch. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's going to be there. Yeah? So we're not talking about this is the beginning of the pastime. We're talking about the end of the pastime. So we're talking like 100 years here.
And we also said previous past that they were agnostics.
There were some in there. That's the other aspect, is that they're doing things in their own way. So where can that go on?
Here.
No, what means you would have the aspect is if you're a materialist, then that does go on. But saying if those things were happening and it's not a problem for the pastimes, where would that happen? In the spiritual world. So in other words, some of these associates have come to the point, whether that's the original associates, which I wouldn't expect, it would be others who have come up to the perfectional platform, that they're acting in such a way that it's fine for the eternal pastimes, but it won't be for those who are sadhakas. So then again, it would be improper for them to stay. So they would go back to the spiritual world and do those things there. But here they wouldn't do, because people will see what they're doing and think that it's authorized and act in that way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami concludes that ultimately the members of the Yadu dynasty are never to be considered irreligious. Vaishnava acharyas have mentioned that the story of the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty is especially meant to help the conditioned souls achieve liberation from the bondage of materialistic life. Within the three worlds, there were none as powerful and as opulent as the Yadu dynasty. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the possessor of unlimited opulences, right? Because throughout in the universe, you would have those who are dealing on the Vaikuntha platform, and it's opulent. But you'll never get anything that's as opulent as Dwarka. Right? Dwarka is the full manifestation of the opulent realms. Right? So majesty that's there, it will be the most opulent because it has that aspect of sweetness. Right? Now, why we say that, not Vrindavan. Vrindavan is more opulent than Dwarka, but nobody cares about the opulence. So it's not a feature. It's just like that. But in Dwarka, then it's part of their service. So they care about the opulence. Does that make sense? So that's why it will be the pinnacle of the Vaikuntha atmosphere. So when he says it's the most opulent within the universe, you have to understand it is like that. Because all the others, Brahma and Indra and that, they're working off more the Vaikuntha standards. But this is Maha Vaikuntha. This is where Vaikuntha is from. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the possessor of unlimited opulences, beauty, strength, knowledge, fame, and so on. And the members of the Yadu dynasty, being the personal associates of the Lord, were also endowed with inconceivable opulences. Therefore, when we see how a fratricidal war suddenly deprived the members of the Yadu dynasty of all their earthly possessions and even their lives, we can understand that there is no permanent position within this material world. Right, so then if we see there's no permanent, then what do? We give up that attachment to the temporary. Right? Because where will they go? They'll go back to the spiritual world. So if we give that up, we can go there also. Right? So you can't make the material world perfect. It just doesn't work. Right? So perfection of the Krishna's energy is when it's connected to the Lord. That's its actual purpose. Right? So then if we use it separate from the Lord, that'll create problems. Right? So they're perfectly connecting it. So if they leave here, they'll just go and continue on there. So that's the point. We're here, we do what the best we can, and then when you leave this body, then you transfer there. Right? You don't stay here. You don't try to make this place, because you can't make it. It's like trying to, turn the toilet into the foyer of a, five-star hotel. It's just not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? I have a bee. Okay. And what's he doing? Just sitting there, going around and around. Okay.
So Maharaj, in the case of the Yadava, they don't change your consciousness.
No. No, there's no difference. Because for them, they're actually never in the material world. It's just that by the Lord's inconceivable potency, spiritual can be seen with material senses. Because we have to remember, the material world is his energy. And so everything can work the way he wants it to. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that he wants to allow the general populace to be able to see his pastimes at the appropriate time when he descends, for that, then they can, even though they don't have spiritual senses. Mm-hmm. So it's not that these Yadavas are working on the material platform and that's why you can see them. No, they're on the spiritual platform, but by Krishna's arrangement, now you can see them. Does that make sense? In other words, although the members of the Yadu dynasty are eternal associates of the Lord and were immediately transferred to another planet where the Lord was appearing, Because if they're the eternal associates, they're coming on the pastimes, they'll just, it stops in this universe, they just move to the next universe. Right? And continue the pastimes all over again. And then a new group of, you know, how you say, interns come in, right? You know, it's a, to be trained up. And then when that, then they all go back to God, and then the eternal associates, they just move to the next universe with the Lord. But at the same time as the apricot, or the unseen pastimes, are eternally going on there. Their sudden disappearance through fratricidal war is meant to impress upon the conditioned souls the temporary nature of this world. Therefore, the apparent indifference or enmity of certain members of the Yadu dynasty towards Krishna should not be taken to be actual irreligion on their part. The entire situation was arranged by Lord Krishna to teach a lesson to the conditioned souls. You know, just like Arjuna, he's not actually an illusion. Yes. But by Yoga Maya, he acts in that way. Yes. It's the Krishna's arrangement.
Okay. For Maharaj, for the liberated soul, everything is a pastime, like Krishna.
For?
For the
eternal associates.
Yes,
it's all a pastime. They're never not part.
So if we absorb in the pastime, we can reach the same consciousness.
Yes, you can reach the same place. Because that's why Krishna and his associates come here, is to give the opportunity that the living entities can elevate themselves to that position. That's the only reason to come. Right? They're not coming here to show off and then go away. You know, it's like, you know, come and drive your, you know, Ferrari down the street really slowly so everyone can get jealous and that. No, that's not why he comes. He comes to, so that everybody can be attracted and then take up the same position. Okay.
Like compassion.
It's compassion, yeah. In this connection, Srila Jiva Goswami has cited several verses from the Bhagavatam to prove that the members of the Yadu dynasty achieved their exalted birth in the Lord's own family by innumerable pious activities, by complete absorption in thought of Lord Krishna. In fact, it is said that in sleeping, sitting, walking, and speaking, they were unable to remember their own selves because they were simply thinking of Krishna. Right? Those verses were, you know, said before. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 1:15:33, Srila Prabhupada has commented as follows on the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. The setting of the sun does not mean the end of the sun. It means that the sun is out of our sight. Similarly, the end of the mission of the Lord on a particular planet or the universe only means he is out of our sight. The end of the Yadu dynasty also does not mean that it is annihilated. It disappears along with the Lord out of our sight. So that's all. It's just a way for it to go. It's just like the sun goes down, you have the horizon. You have to have some horizon. They're Kshatriyas, right? You know, so they're not going to go out, you know, to how you say, waving their hat with a cane and all that. You know, that entertainers will do that. They're going to go out with a bang. They're warriors. They'll fight. Right? That's how they go. Okay.
Maharaj, seeing this prakat aprakat pastimes, then Bhagavatam being a, you know, main book explains, you know, prakat pastimes, and then some features of apricot.
Right.
But then, naturally, our main meditation on Bhagavatam becomes prakat pastimes.
Yes, because that's where we can see it.
But then we know also that Goswami's Vrindavana, they did also apricot meditation.
That's there, but once you're part of the scene, then, because it's like, how much, remember when we were before, at the end of the 10th canto, Sukadeva Goswami is summarizing very quickly. Because how much is left to discuss? So that means they're at the end of the time with the Lord. 10th canto is very big, the other 9 cantos and all that. So out of 18, let's just say out of 18 volumes, we only have 2 left, and one of them small.
Yes.
And they're already gone halfway through that one. So you're at the end of the time that that Parikshit Maharaj has left.
Yeah.
So he's just summarizing up quick. Otherwise, he could talk forever. You know, so all it is that those who are able to perceive these pastimes, then they can see all the details and all those things. So it's just a matter, if it's revealed to you, then you're seeing. And if it's not, then it's not. So the point is, prakat just means what's unrevealed is able to be seen. And then it goes back to being unseen.
Yeah.
So it's not that there's really difference. It mentions that the demons aren't killed, the gopis don't have husbands, and there's the birth points. But it's not that you don't have parts of Goloka where he's not eternally a baby, right? You know what I'm saying? Why do people keep having kids? Right? Because then that time spent as a baby, right? The first 2 years are totally dependent. After that, they're not so dependent. And the older they get, the less dependent they are. So as far as that intensity of parental rasa, that's there. So there'll be parts where he's eternally doing that. Other places where he's eternally doing others. So it's only in the prakat pastimes that it'll start from birth and go all the way through. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then it's what is your relationship with the Lord, that aspect eternally goes on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, for Mother Jashoda, the childhood pastimes are where it's at. When he's older, it's nice. He's just the same person, but it doesn't have the intensity it does. Well, like, let's say that when he's a baby, the Kumara pastimes, it's not that they don't have some kind of connection, interaction with gopis. But that's not their main time. Their main time is the Kishore age. Does that make sense? And the cowherd boys, they're good all the way through. So, you know, they're good. Cows, you know, they're all okay. So it's just a matter of that all these things can go on according to the taste of the devotees and this and that and what's happening. So there's unlimited variety that can happen even in one pastime. Does that make sense? So as the pastimes go around and change, then it's always slightly different. Like we mentioned that Jambavan, because he's Chiranjee, so he lives for the life, you know, the length of the, you know, Lord Brahma. So that means every pastime of Lord Ramachandra, he's been in. So for however, you know, whether, I don't know if he's there from day, you know, the first day of Brahma. But if he is, that means he's seen every Ramlila pastime. And then he's explaining to the monkeys, or talking to Lord Ramachandra, how, you know, how amazing this pastime is, where he's floating, you know, taking rocks, mountain peaks, and floating them as a bridge. And he was telling about how all the other ways that they got to Lanka in the previous time. This time he did that, and that time he did this, and like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's unlimited what you can do. That's the point, is that it's not that you ever run out. So Krishna being the source of that, the freshness, the newness is always there. We're not the producing the energy. So only according to our karma do we get experiences. It's new, it's fresh, but how long is it new, it's fresh? Somebody does something once, you know, and it's nice. The second time it's not nice. Other people can do the same thing for years before it starts to get a little stale. You know, so it's just a matter of here, it's just a matter of karma. But there, because the energies are unlimited, they can generate unlimited variety. So wherever you are in the pastimes, whatever is the particular flavor to take that one's interested to take part in, then that part is always going on, and you're always satisfied. So you don't have to generate, you have to change. You know, okay, I've been a cowherd boy for a while. Hey, why don't we try being a cow for a while? What's that like? You know. So, no, you don't have to do that. It's unlimited. Is that okay? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna thought, no outside force could ever bring about the defeat of this family, the Yadu dynasty, whose members have always been fully surrendered to me and are unrestricted in their opulence. Right, so since they'll do everything for Krishna, how much opulence that they feel is required, that's how much they'll have. Right? So, you know, you see Ugrasena, he has a huge amount. Other kings will have according to their position. So they're not restricted like we are. We're restricted by karma. They're not. But they don't take advantage because it's not for enjoying. So if they don't need it, they don't have it. Does that make sense? Okay, so it's not that they get stuff and then they go down and rent one of those storage units and then stick it there because they don't need it anymore, but maybe later. You know, yeah. They don't do that. But if I inspire a quarrel within the dynasty, that quarrel will act just like a fire created from the friction of bamboo in a grove. and then I shall achieve my real purpose and return to my eternal abode, right? Because he's come to claim this conditioned soul. They've come up, they've become part of the pastimes, right? So now, then his real purpose is there, to then eternally go on enjoying the pastimes with these devotees. The BBT purport states, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has pointed out that ordinary people, hearing of the adventures of the Yadu family, might think that the heroes of the Yadu dynasty are as worshipable as Krishna, or that they are independent controllers. In other words, people polluted by Mayavad philosophy might see the Yadu dynasty as being on the same level as Krishna. Therefore, to establish that even the most powerful living entity can never equal or surpass the Supreme Lord, Krishna arranged for the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. Right? So that also then brings that. And then those who are atheistic, then they'll also be, you know, it gives them something to think about.
We have in India different families who say that they are Yadavas, and they are very proud of being Yadavas because they are from the land of Kashmir. So this is what like it means.
Yeah. The point is, this pride is never pleasing to Krishna, right? If it's engaged in his service, that's one thing, but they're talking about they're proud themselves. Because they're proud that they're Yadavas, but it's not proud that they're about Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami continued, My dear King Parikit, when the Supreme Almighty Lord, whose desire always comes to pass, had thus made up his mind, he withdrew his own family on the pretext of a curse spoken by an assembly of brahmanas. The BBT purport states, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has made a very important comment on this verse. He states that since the intentions of the Supreme Lord, Krishna Chandra, are always perfect, it was certainly in consideration of the greatest benefit for the entire world that he destroyed his own family in the pretext of a curse by brahmanas. In this connection, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has shown a parallel in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with Krishna himself appearing as his own devotee. Lord Chaitanya appeared along with his first plenary expansion known as Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and with Lord Advaita Prabhu. All three personalities, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Prabhu, are accepted by Vaishnav Acharyas to be in the category of Vishnu Tattva, the full status of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These three personalities of Godhead perceive that in the future, their so-called seminal descendants would get undue recognition and thus, being puffed up, would commit grave offenses against those who were actually Vaishnav gurus or representatives of the Lord. Ordinary people not understanding the higher principles of spiritual knowledge easily forget the actual qualifications of a bona fide spiritual master and instead give undue importance to people born in the Lord's so-called family. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore, avoided this impediment on the path of spiritual enlightenment by leaving behind no children. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu married twice, he was childless. Nityananda Prabhu, who is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, did not accept any of the natural sons born of his own son, Sri Virabhadra. Similarly, Lord Advaitacharya divested of his association all of his sons except Achyutananda and two others. Achyutananda, the chief faithful son of Advaitacharya, had no seminal progeny. And the remaining three of the six sons of Advaita fell from the path of devotion to the Lord and are known as rejected sons. In other words, the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu allowed little facility for continuing a so-called seminal family to create confusion. Because you see, those who do come in these lines, they're very proud of their position. Right? The Goswami lines is that not that they don't know or practice the Vaishnav, you know, philosophy and tenets. It's just that they're proud of their position, their birth. That's what makes them special. Not that by practicing devotional service, that's what's special. So they'll automatically consider themselves in a very special position, that they're automatically gurus, rather than they're qualified to be gurus. Does that make sense? So to avoid that, then we see is basically all the lines just ended. Lord Chaitanya had no kids, then up to one son, then that was accepted of Nityananda, after that not, and then with Advaitacharya, then you had three sons, and after that not. So anybody after that can't claim. Right? Because that's just, otherwise it just creates problems. Because even you have those who are You had the Goswamis. They had no children. Right? But they established temples for their deities, so the worship could go on nicely. Then they had Brahmins, who were the pujaris for those temples. Now, the children in those lines of those Brahmins, they become caste Goswamis. And they have technically no connection to the Goswami, other than they worship their deity. So the Radharaman Goswamis, or the Madan Mohan, or Govindaji Goswamis, they were the Brahmin priests of the deity. They're not actually connected. And so the seminal lines, they really create problem. And even these are not seminal lines, they still create problem by the seminal line. So that's why then it's Krishna is just, you remove them all, then you don't get these problems. Otherwise people will claim and then, you know, make trouble with it. So the respect shown to the conception of seminal lineage in deference to the ideas of the smartest is unfit to be accepted by one who actually understands the supreme truth from Vedic authority. Because right? Just that they're born there. You know, it's probably like says, you have a well, it's very nice water, but if you don't take care of it, after a while it starts to go bad. But you claim that, no, this is the special well, but the water's bad now. You know, that's the... According to Sridhar Swami, the following two verses, 6 and 7, indicate that Lord Krishna, having achieved all the purposes for which he had descended, went back to his spiritual kingdom. Sukadev Goswami continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the reservoir of all beauty. All beautiful things emanate from him, and his personal form is so attractive that it steals the eyes away from all other objects, which then seem devoid of beauty in comparison to him. When Lord Krishna was on the earth, he attracted the eyes of all people. When Krishna spoke, his words attracted the minds of all who remembered them. By seeing the footsteps of Lord Krishna, people became attracted to him, and thus they wanted to offer their bodily activities to the Lord as his followers. In this way, Krishna very easily spread his glories, which are sung throughout the world by the most sublime and essential Vedic verses. Lord Krishna considered that simply by hearing and chanting those glories, conditioned souls born in the future would cross beyond the darkness of ignorance. Like, so those means those in the future, they would hear about that. So that's where, you know, we're hearing now. It's in the future. So these are spoken 5,000 years ago, and so we're hearing them now. So we're in that future, right? And that future will keep going. And so by hearing these, we can become attracted. We can become on that same transcendental platform. Being satisfied with this arrangement, he left for his desired destination. And so basically you can see is that he gave this whole pastime of wrapping it up in that very short thing, and that's done. Because the glories of the Lord, the position of the Lord, the relationship with his devotees, and that has been nicely explained, and he wrapped up his pastimes and left. And so it has been complete here. But we'll see with questions, then more detail will come out. But otherwise, he's said it like this, he's happy. Right? Because it's not one of the major pastimes that we sit around and discuss. It's not one of the popular pastimes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Krishna, having appeared, having attracted the senses of all people, made them blind, deaf, mute, mad, and paralyzed. Right? In ecstatic symptoms, right? Who can call him merciful? He is the greatest thief. This is the form of vyaja stuti, criticizing, indicating praise. Right? You're presenting as if it's a criticism, but what does this mean when you know what these are? Then you understand as they've come to the transcendental platform. That they're just, they see nothing else other than Krishna. They don't want to hear anything else other than Krishna. They don't want to speak anything else other than Krishna. They're totally absorbed in Krishna at the end of all of us, and they're paralyzed means they can't do anything except what's connected to Krishna. Prikit Mara is...
Yeah, the bees.
Mary's over here. Where is he? Here?
Here.
Yeah.
He's listening.
Well, he's not interested in going anywhere. Okay, there we go. You go, you pointed it out. I was doing fine. You know?
Go back.
That guy ratted on me. Right? Now he's saying I was on the back of your neck. Yeah. King Parikit inquired, how could the Brahmins and the bees say, says, it says the association of devotees, I go to get association of devotees and they chase me away. What's going on? King Parikit inquired, how could the Brahmanas curse the Vrishnis, who were always respectful to the Brahmanas, charitable and inclined to serve senior and exalted personalities, and whose minds were always fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna? What was the motive for this curse? What did it consist of, O purest of the twice born? And how could such a disagreement have arisen among the Yadus, who all shared the same goal of life? Please tell me all these things, right? Because before it mentioned that if you have conclusion, then where's the argument? When there's no conclusion, then everybody has a different idea, then you can argue. But they always were, their conclusion is Krishna, is worship of Krishna. Yeah. So how could they, a disagreement that they would actually have a war and kill each other? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, how could there be a quarrel causing their destruction among those with one mind? Ekat manam. The BBT purport states, Brahmanas generally become angry at persons who disrespect the Brahminical class, who are uncharitable, and who decline to serve senior respectable personalities. The Vrishnis, however, were not like that, and thus they are described here by King Parikit as Brahmanyanam, or sincere followers of Brahminical culture. Further, even if the Brahmanas became angry, why would they curse members of Krishna's own family? Since the Brahmanas were well-learned, they must have known that it is an offense to oppose personal associates of the Supreme Lord. The Yadu dynasty is specifically described here as Vrishninam and Krishna Chaitasam. In other words, they were Krishna's own men, and they were always absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Therefore, even if somehow or other the Brahmanas had cursed them, how could that curse have had any effect? Like we see with Parikit Maharaj, Prabhupada mentions that he could have countered the curse, because the Vaishnava is so much, these pure Vaishnavas are so much more powerful than any mundane person. So why that? Because they accepted it. That's all. But otherwise they couldn't. So why would the curse even have effect? One, how could they curse? Why would they be cursed? And how could it even take effect, even if it was there? These are questions of Parikit Maharaj. Although the Vrishnis are described in this verse as Krishna Chaitasam, always absorbed in thinking of Krishna, it is clearly indicated that Krishna desired that the Brahmanas become angry and curse the Yadu dynasty. The Supreme Lord desired to remove his personal dynasty from the earth, and therefore uncustomarily offensive behavior was exhibited by the young boys of Krishna's own family. Right? They shouldn't have done the whole thing, this story is just arranged. So we already have a time, right? Gandhari gave the time. Now we just have to have a method. Right? It is to be understood from this incident that when a man displays envy and ridicule of devotees of Vishnu, his Brahmanyata, or high spiritual qualifications, along with his reverence for Sri Krishna, are all destroyed. Right? So Vaishnava, offense against Vaishnavas, that can clear even devotional service. Well, nothing mundane can clear it. Right? There's no other activities that can remove it. It may cover it, but it can't remove it. Contempt and ridicule directed towards respectable persons and true brahmanas vanquish all good qualities. If there is a break in etiquette towards his devotees, the Supreme Lord will become ill-disposed even to his own relatives and friends, and thus arrange to destroy those who oppose his devotees. If foolish persons in the guise of members of Krishna's personal family express enmity towards Vaishnavas, such offenders cannot properly be called offspring of Lord Krishna's dynasty. Right? So that way, because we're saying they themselves couldn't do this, but when they behave like this, technically they're not in that category. Right? Because Krishna will always protect the devotees. So even if others are inimical towards the devotees, he will protect the devotees. So at that time, those who are being inimical aren't acting as devotees, so they'll be the ones that get the reaction. Does that make sense? Now, if they see that and correct that and surrender to Krishna, then now they're back in acting as devotees. So there's no eternal damnation. It's just a matter of what's the reality of how you're acting. Then that's the position that you're giving. That's the position you function in. So this is the supreme equality of the personality of Godhead. Like I said before, you know, a proper king, even if the enemy doesn't do anything, he won't punish an enemy if he's done nothing wrong. And his own family member, if they've done something wrong, they will get punished. Like that. Sukadeva Goswami said, "The Lord who bore his body as the amalgamation of everything beautiful, dutifully executed the most auspicious activities while on the earth. Although he was, in fact, without any endeavor, already satisfied in all desires." Right? So he doesn't need to do anything, but he performs all these wonderful activities to attract the minds of the living entity, though he has no duties. "Residing in his abode and enjoying life, the Lord, whose qualification is in itself magnanimous, now wanted to annihilate his dynasty, as there still remains some small part of his duty to be carried out." Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. "The Lord produced the curse through the Brahmanas by his will, since he desired to disappear with the Vrishnis after completing his intended work." Right? It's going to be presented in this way. But we also see that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has pointed out that he wants to take them with him. So there has to be some way that they'll go. And in doing that, then others will be instructed that the material world is temporary. Right? After completing his intended work, making all men successful by showing his most attractive form, pastimes, and pleasure. Pleasures. So he's done that. He's attracted the minds of the living entities. So now he moves to the next universe to go through the pastimes. All that he wanted to do was completed. Apta kamaha. He had the magnanimous favor of giving prema to the people born in the future, since he was known for his form, pastimes, and pleasures. He then desired to destroy his family through the curse of the Brahmins, since he had three remaining activities to perform. The devatas among the Yadus would be reestablished in Swarga. His portions would be reestablished in Vaikuntha, Swetadweep, Abhadrik Ashram, and other places. And he would disappear with his eternal associates from the eyes of materialistic people. So the devatas would go back to the heavenly planets, because remember in the beginning he told them all to come and take birth so that they could take part, you know, in his pastimes. So they'll all go back to their positions in the heavenly planets. Right? Then all of his unksas and that, for wherever they are, they'll go back to their places. And then, you know, with his associates, then he'll leave and go on to the next place. Right? Means whatever's their part of the pastimes, they'll go. But it also means then all the others, because within Vasudeva, all the incarnations, right? So then all those different incarnations will go to their place, because we have Krishna and Arjuna, so Nara Narayan Rishi. So where will they go? Bhadrik Ashram. The BBT purport says, it doesn't mean that they don't go on to the next. It means what's happening in this universe, they all go back to their places, and wherever they'll go to the next universe. Because whenever Vasudeva comes, everybody comes together. All the demigods come, all the incarnations come, everybody's there. Then when he goes with his associates onto the next place, demigods go back to their place, and his expansions all go back to their places. So, and materialistic people can't see anymore. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The sages Vishramitra, Asita, Kanva, Durvasa, Bhrigu, Angira, Kasyapa, Vamanadeva, Atri, and Vishishta, along with Narada and others, once performed fruitive rituals that awarded abundant pious results, bring great happiness and take away the sins of Kali Yuga for the whole world by merely being recounted. Right? Just by recounting the sacrifices that they did, it will, pure, take away all the sins of, or take away the sins of Kali Yuga for the whole world. Let alone doing them, right? Just recounting them. The sages duly executed these rituals in the home of the chief of the Yadus, Vasudeva, the father of Lord Krishna. After Lord Krishna, who was staying in Vasudeva's house, as time personified, respectfully sent the sages off at the conclusion of the ceremonies, they went to the holy place called Pindaraka. The BBT purport states, according to Sridhar Swami, certain religious rituals, such as the Ashwamedha Yajna, generate pious reactions. On the other hand, activities such as caring for one's children give immediate pleasure in the present only, whereas rituals performed as atonement take away sinful reactions. Right? Does that make sense? So these big sacrifices, they'll give you a result in the future, not now. But then performing the activities, you know, like taking care of the family, the children, that gives an immediate result. And then there's activities you can perform that remove, counteract sins from the past. Does that make sense? To purify you. But the religious activities mentioned in verse 11 were pious in all respects, in all three. They produced abundant pious results and great joy and were so potent that merely glorifying these rituals relieves one from all the sinful reactions of Kali Yuga. Sukadeva Goswami continued, to that holy place, the young boys of the Yadu dynasty had brought Samba, son of Jambavati, dressed in woman's garb. Playfully approaching the great sages gathered there, the boys grabbed hold of the sages' feet and impudently asked them with feigned humility, O learned Brahmins, this black-eyed pregnant woman has something to ask you. She is too embarrassed to inquire for herself. She is just about to give birth and is very desirous of having a son. Since all of you are great sages with infallible vision, please tell us whether her child will be a boy or a girl. Yeah, so it's just... You get off track, punks everywhere are the same, right? The BBT purport states, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has made the following comment. The impudent behavior of the young Yadus towards the sages headed by Narada, who are all brahmanas and devotees of the Lord, was a display of devotion, deviation from the path of Lord Krishna. Similarly, although the Prakriti Sahajiyas think of themselves as intimate associates of Krishna, the supremely merciful Lord's determination is perfectly correct in working to finish such false devotees. Such impostors actually never accept real service to Krishna. The Yadu Kumara's deception is termed seemingly humble, meaning that in fact they were anything but humble. Therefore, the ridiculing of Vaishnavas by the Lord's family resulted in a great offense against the devotees of the Lord. Right, and it's not, and who you're bringing together are the biggest like that, you know, just to make sure, because you have to wipe out the whole Yadu dynasty, so it can't just be anybody. Right? Believing the Brahmanas, Vaishnavas, and Rishis to be foolishly lacking knowledge in material affairs of sense gratification, the Yadu Kumaras addressed Samba, the son of Jambavati, as a woman and tried to mock the saintly assembly, right? Because thinking they wouldn't notice and know what's going on. And, you know, they would talk, yes, you know, this, that, and, you know, but they're supposed to know past, present, future, but they're going like that. But the point is, no, they do know. They do know what's going on. They're just not involved, that's all. Lord Krishna wanted to teach that such an offense committed against great devotees by his associate Samba would be the cause of the Yadu dynasty's destruction, all as part of his lila. Right? So, just this one offense, you know, like that can have that effect, because the Lord wants. Just like the Lord wanted Kurukshetra to happen. It was specific offense against Draupadi. And then from that you get this war. You know, so many other things are built up, but...
I was thinking that maybe similarly to this, if we think that Srila Prabhupada is lacking in material knowledge and is only spiritually...
Yeah, then you'll end up with the same problem. Your devotional life will be stunted, because if you know Krishna, you do know everything. You may not know the detail, but you know what it's for. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say you have a rich kid, right? He turns 18, so he can get a license. Or let's say there's some states so you can get a license at 16. and he buys himself whatever is the most expensive Ferrari he can get his hands on. Right? But he has the car, he knows how to drive the car, but does he actually know what the car is for? How to use it for its actual... He doesn't. So someone else who doesn't have that car, maybe doesn't have all that tech, does know. That's the most important. So the idea that technical knowledge is actually the real knowledge. No, it's the essence of knowledge. What it's for, how it's used, how it's applied in your life, how it can benefit the soul and bring the soul back to its natural position. That's real knowledge. So when you know Krishna, you know that. And you can see, therefore, and you can also see what's behind. You can see, you know, the four defects, you know, why, like he said here, seemingly humble. The sages can see that. They think they're being really good actors and no one will notice. So that's the whole thing, is that you do know. You can see what they can't see. And the technical points, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami has confirmed that the lack of humility shown by the sons of the Yadu dynasty was an arrangement by the Lord himself. In other words, the members of the Yadu dynasty are ultimately associates of Lord Krishna. And to facilitate the instructive pastimes of the Lord, they acted in apparently unethical ways. So Krishna's arranged it so that we would learn from it, that even the family of Krishna, the associates of Krishna, if you do these things, it's not going to work out well. So if it doesn't work well for them, then we have to be careful. Otherwise, we'll say, oh, well, they do it, I can do it. So that's why Krishna then, you know, that's one of the aspects why the Acharyas mentioned why he removed the family. But we see after all those technical points on all these things connected with, you know, Dharma and the earth and all these things, the actual, you know, the main reason for the Lord is he wants to take his associates with him. And they wouldn't be comfortable if he's not there. So they all go together.
So Maharaj, can you say that every pastime of Krishna is to please the devotee and also to teach something?
Yes. Maybe. Otherwise, why have the pastime here? It means that having the pastimes in the spiritual world, we're not seeing them. What will we learn from them? So they come here to attract the minds of the devotees and please the devotees, protect the devotees, but also give an opportunity for those who are not devotees to become attractive. And at the same time, rectify whatever is disturbances that will be a problem for devotional service. Right? Somebody says to me? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus ridiculed by deceit, the sages became angry. O king, and told the boys, fools, she will bear you an iron club that will destroy your entire dynasty. Upon hearing the curse of the sages, the terrified boys quickly uncovered the belly of Samba, and indeed they observed that therein was an iron club. The young men of the Yadu dynasty said, oh, what have we done? We are so unfortunate. Right? Because there is a club there. What will our family members say to us? Speaking thus and being very disturbed, they returned to their homes, taking the club with them. The Yadu boys, the luster of their faces completely faded, brought the club into the royal assembly, and in the presence of all the Yadavas, they told King Ugrasena what had happened. O King Parikit, when the inhabitants of Dwarka heard of the infallible curse of the Brahmanas and saw the club, they were astonished and distraught with fear. After having the club ground to bits, King Ahuka Ugrasena of the Yadus personally threw the pieces along with a remaining lump of iron into the water of the ocean. A certain fish swallowed the iron lump, and the bits of iron carried back to the shore by the waves implanted themselves there and grew into tall, sharp canes. The fish was caught in the ocean along with other fish in a fisherman's net. The iron lump in the fish's stomach was taken by the hunter Jara, who fixed it as an arrowhead at the end of his shaft. Knowing fully the significance of all these events, the Supreme Lord, though capable of reversing the Brahmana's curse, did not wish to do so. Rather, in his form of tithe, he gladly sanctioned the events. Vaishnava personally doesn't have to. He sees it's working, but it's time, then it all goes on. The BBT purport states, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada has commented that the Supreme Lord, Krishna Chandra, decided to maintain the curse intact in order to protect the actual principles of religion and destroy the unbecoming offense of the deceitful members of Krishna's dynasty. Sri Narahari Sarkar Thakur, in his book Krishna Bhajanamrita, has corrected the improper statements of the Gauranga Nagari Vadis, Shakyabeka Vadis, and others of the 11 pseudo-disciplic chains that claim to follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These unauthorized persons present cheating in the guise of religion and advertise their duplicity as katha, or pure worship of the Lord. Just as Krishna brought about a furious quarrel to destroy his own family, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arranged for the world to be flooded by varieties of Mayavad and Karmavad philosophies just after his disappearance. He did this to destroy persons who belong to the 11 upper sampradayas, or unauthorized disciplic traditions, as well as the many other Ampasapadayas that would appear in the future and presume to call themselves devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or pretend to be descendants in his family line. So either those who are coming in the lines like that or others who make up their own philosophies. Because all of these, they have someone who started the philosophy. They're there, they're doing something, and then they come up with some idea and then they just start their own philosophy. So they all just come up like that. So in this way, then they can all be, you know. At the same time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arranged for his own men to be kept away from the pseudo-devotion of these cheaters. The devotees of Lord Gaurasundar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, can discern the mysteries of his pastimes that manifest in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. The activities of the transcendental body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be understood in any ordinary mundane way. That is the essential meaning of this chapter. Right? Yeah, so the conclusion, only the devotees of the Lord can discern the mysteries of his pastimes. They cannot be understood by any ordinary mundane way. So without the Acharya's commentaries, we wouldn't actually understand what's going on in the pastimes. Sukadev Goswami understands it. He's explaining it to Prikit Maharaj, who understands it. Where he doesn't, he asks a question. Right? Lord Krishna detected that by their intimate association with him, some members of the Yadu dynasty become indifferent by his will. But they're acting in that way. It's still his will because he's winding up in such a way that it's, you know, it will also be instructive and will, you know, keep them busy, absorbed. They would surely cause great misfortune for the world. And foolish persons would take such whimsical behavior to be the will of Krishna. Ordinary people might even think that the heroes of the Yadu dynasty are as worshipable as Krishna and thus become polluted by Mayavad philosophy. Therefore, to establish, you understand, so there's a limit, they're always there, because otherwise, you see, before we had this thing where, you know, Prabhupada was the king and, you know, this and that, and they don't make any distinctions and all these different things. So, no, there's a way things are done. Like Lord Chaitanya didn't like being called the Supreme Lord, he was taking the mood of a devotee. So one always has to be careful that these things do come up. Right? And they've always been there. Here's 5,000 years ago, this kind of aspect. So it's not that it can't come up at any time. It's not new. Okay. You know, those who are, you know, like it says, becoming indifferent, and then people will, that whimsical behavior, all these different things, we see it, you know, different places these things come up. So when Krishna arranges that they're cleared. But by them coming up, then you can see. And then you see, this is pure devotion, that's not. Therefore, to establish that even the most powerful living entity can never equal or surpass the Supreme Lord, Krishna arranged for the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. So we saw in the last canto that Krishna's supremacy over Brahma, over Shiva, you know, over whatever the position, that's there. So now we see here in the beginning of this, even, you know, his own family and all that, so that we don't get distracted there. Mm-hmm. Similarly to Lord Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Prabhu perceived that in the future their so-called seminal descendants would get undue recognition and thus, being puffed up, would commit grave offenses against those who were actually Vaishnava gurus or representatives of the Lord. On the other hand, the members of the Yadu dynasty are eternal associates of the Lord, and therefore they cannot bear to be separated from the Lord. Since Krishna was preparing to give up his earthly pastimes, if he were to leave the Yadu dynasty on earth, they would surely come to become so disturbed by his absence that in their highly agitated state of mind, they would trample and destroy the earth. Therefore, Krishna arranged the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty prior to his own disappearance. The Vaishnavacharyas have also mentioned that the story of the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty is especially meant to help the conditioned souls achieve liberation from the bondage of material life, right? Because if everything has to go, then you don't put your faith in anything in the material world, right? Only in what's eternal. Krishna's name, his form, qualities, pastimes, right? Service to Krishna and the Vaishnava. Those things are eternal. But the situations that are there, those never are. The belief that the Brahmanas, Vaishnavas, and Rishis are to be foolishly lacking knowledge in material affairs of sense gratification is an offense committed against great devotees. It was the curse cause of the Yadu dynasty's destruction as part of Krishna's Lord's Leela. As you see, is that from this, if you believe the Brahmanas, Vaishnavas, and Rishis are foolishly lacking in knowledge of the material affairs of sense gratification, in other words, how the world works, right? Then what philosophy is this, technically? That's their common mumsa is you're performing your activities. What do we call it when we take it that the deity is good on the spiritual but not on the material, so you make a distant deism. You understand? So then they're bringing that aspect of deifying out that they're great sages, but they don't know anything here. So therefore, we have to manage here, and we have to be practical here. And so therefore, we'll interpret the scriptures. We'll do things the way that we see is best to, you know, how you say, so-called fulfill God's desires. You know, how you say, you know, it's God's will. You know, that kind of stuff. So then that's the problem is that they deify, they separate. But they don't know these things? What does it take? It's not rocket science. You know what I'm saying? Even to get into the most fancy things, instead of holding your wine glass like this, you hold it like this. You know, instead of just drinking it, you also use your nose. And then, did I leave anything out? Right? No? That's it. Okay. So, that's the whole point, is that it's not rocket science. And so, what's to not know? They read the scriptures. Sense gratification is described in the scriptures. They know all the scriptures. Why would they know it? They're just not interested. Does that make sense?
When you say that Guru Sadhu Shastra, all the three are very important.
Guru Sadhu and Shastra, yes.
So they're not accepting. They're just accepting the Shastras, but the other people are completely ignorant. And that's why they're having a problem with this.
Yeah, you could. I mean, if you want to put it in that context, you could. The main thing is they're thinking that the sadhus, they may know the spiritual stuff, but they don't know the material. You know, it's a very common thing. Like now I don't hear it so much, but before when we discuss on the masculine and feminine principle, then, you know, it would go along as long as present, but when it starts getting down to really, you know, very specific points, then there's always going to come a point in the conversation where the grihastha will say, but you're a sannyasa, what do you know? And the point is, well, if you know as a grihastha, why are you sitting here listening to me? You'd be at home and everything would be hunky-dory. But your marriage is falling apart. And the ones who say it the strongest are generally the ones that's guaranteed. Just, you know, you can count the months until their marriage falls apart, literally. One told me that so strongly, 3 months later, gone. You know, so it's just, you know, you understand? So that's there. It's just, it's thought you can't know. The whole chapter on Prachina Barhishat, right? You know, Paranjana. Does that not get into some details how the whole thing works and sense gratification? Who told that story? Narad Muni. And who's in the assembly? Narad Muni. But then these kids think, oh, what do they know? They're sages. They won't know all this stuff. You know, so that's the thing, is that they distance it, but the whole advantage of that is then now I'm the authority. I can do what I want. Their authority in spiritual stuff. Okay, you can tell us how to chant Hare Krishna and this and that. But when it comes to running our lives and family and money and this and that, you know, we know. How can you know? You know, scripture is just theory, and these sages, they're renounced. What do they know? So therefore. Not that they want to get involved, but it's not that they don't know. It's just that it's not their field of interest. Okay. Yes?
Still, even to the devotees, or some devotees, it may sound like a bit out of proportion. You know, kids were playing and joking and mocking, but then, you know, they got the curse for the whole dynasty to disappear.
But that's how karma works. In Manu, it says you insult a chaste woman. You, your family, anyone connected to you. You know, that includes your dentist, you know, your, you know, everybody. You know, the guy who delivers pizza, they're all destroyed. Right? That's the way it is. In other words, what it's showing is how bad those things are. We're taking it, what's the big deal? Because that's all we do is insult and all that. I don't know if you've had experience, but certain... I mean, it's everywhere to some degree. But I find it's very interesting. And one group, they're kind of like a combination between intellectual and eclectic and artistic. Not autistic, artistic. Right, so you know.
Intelligentsia.
Huh?
They call themselves intelligentsia.
Yeah, intelligentsia and, you know, those kind of things like that. Their pleasure is just discussing, harassing each other and making pot shots at each other and just, but doing it in an intellectual way. They won't use a rough way. Common people will use rough way and rough language. They'll consider them so uncultured. They're doing exactly the same thing. But it's just they do it in such a seemingly refined way, how they'll harass each other and all that. Does that make sense? And so it's just taken as it's part of lifestyle. Just like, you know, before you go on stage, you want to wish the guy luck. You don't say, you know, good luck or that, you know, who says that? You say break a leg, you know, or you say knock him dead, you know. So what's auspicious about this at all? So they take pleasure in saying inauspicious things and breaking the rules and doing exactly what you shouldn't do and call that fun. And so then naturally then when we look at these things that are serious, we'll take them, what's the big deal? But the point is, you know, since when can you offend Narad Muni and get away with it? Let alone Narad Muni throw in everybody else that's there. Each one of them could destroy your dynasty. So you got a whole bunch of them just to make sure, right? Does that make sense? Ravana takes one lady, it destroys his whole dynasty. You know? Even on the material platform. What happened to all the members of Troy? There was nothing after that war. It was gone. The whole dynasty, the city, they just finished. And they were very powerful, very developed. I mean, who can hold out for 10 years in a fight, you know, when 1,000 ships show up, you know, and they have Achilles. And demigods are out there fighting. And they're still doing. So think of the qualifications they have in piety in that. But because they dealt badly, then it all is destroyed. So it's just the way it works. You know? I mean, the senators kill Caesar. And after that, it's just a matter of time. Every one of them, down to the last man, is killed. Not one person wasn't. It wasn't they, you know, died, they choked on a peanut or something. They were specifically killed. And one wasn't, someone else killed him, and they were very annoyed with that. Okay, we want to kill him. Why, you should kill him. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way things work. So what all it means is that that person who's saying that would not consider this a great offense. Offending the great person, that wouldn't be a big offense. The problem would be if you said the wrong buzzword, then they'd get very offended. You know? Is that, yeah. So it's just a matter of, that's what the Shastra are for, is to put things in perspective. What's what? That's what Manu does. You know what is a serious offense and what's not. Otherwise, a lot of things we take as a major offense, you know, Manu says isn't. And things that we'll say is an offense, Manu says is. So that's what the Shastras are for, Guru Sadhu Shastra, so that we can understand what actually is the proportion, because human mentality has a particular proportion. You take it out of that, then you end up with the other 8,400,000 species. So, yeah. So, to believe that the Brahmins, Vaishnavas, and Rishis are, to be foolishly lacking knowledge in material affairs of sense gratification is an offense committed against great devotees. It was the cause of the Yadu dynasty's destruction, at all as part of the Lord's Leela. So in other words, it's happening only because the Lord sanctions it. But it still teaches us a lesson like that. The devotees of Lord Gaurasundar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, can discern the mysteries of his pastimes that manifest in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. The activities of the transcendental body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be understood in any ordinary mundane way. So, with devotion, one can understand. Otherwise, you can't understand because it's beyond material logic. Chapter 2. Maharaj Nimi meets the 9 Yogendras. Pratigya. The Lord who binds all jivas by the chains of Maya, is bound by the chains of prema by the devotee. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Chapter 2 summarized as questions and answers. Whoa, so many questions here. Serious question, Chakra. Vasudeva asked Srila Narad Muni, question 11.2 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 11.2, 7-9. O Brahmana, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kinds of fear. In a previous birth on this earth, I worship the Supreme Lord Ananta, who alone can award liberation. But because I desired to have a child, I did not worship him for liberation. Thus, I was bewildered by the Lord's illusory energy. My dear Lord, you are always true to your vow. Please instruct me clearly, so that by your mercy I may easily free myself from material existence, which is full of many dangers and keeps us constantly bound in fear. Narad Muni answers this question over the next 4 chapters by relating the questions asked by Maharaj Nimi of the Navi Yogendras. Like before, the question was asked, then they relate someone else's discussion of where they discussed the point. Maharaj Nimi asked, now that was Vasudeva asked Narad Muni, then within that he relates the story of the Navi Yogendras and Nimi. So Nimi then asked the Navi Yogendras, 11.3. From 2:30-31. O completely sinless ones, I ask you to kindly tell me what the supreme good is. After all, even half a moment's association with pure devotees within this world of birth and death is a priceless treasure for any man. Please speak about how one engages in devotional service of the Supreme Lord. If you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics. Right, so they never think that by their intelligence they can understand. It's revealed. And they never think that because I want to know, I'm qualified. So if you feel I'm qualified, then you answer. But if you feel I'm not, okay, that's understood. You know, much like, not like today where it's my right. I ask, so it's my right to know. Everybody has to say whatever I want to know. But, you know, how does that work? You know, it's just, what is it? They ask that. They had that whole thing with the Facebook wallow. The
Mark?
Yeah, the one, Zuckerberg. Yeah, he went before the, I think the Senate or something. You know, and so he's saying the information is there, and so then he's using it, you know, for economic purposes. So then one of the senators asked him, could you please tell us where you stayed last night? You know, where you went to dinner and what you had for dinner, and then after when you went home, then what you were doing in your apartment. And he was very uncomfortable. He says, why I should tell you this? You know, he says, no, this is my personal life. Why you should know? You know, what has that got to do with this? It's not part of this discussion. And then the senator said, exactly. So why are you doing that with everybody else? And it's all right. You know, so... So that's the whole thing, is this thing's because I want to know, it's my right. No. If you're qualified, then you hear. Just because you want to know doesn't mean you do. You know? People have their position also. And it's always, it's my right to know. What about their right for you to not know? Mm-hmm. Yes?
I guess one aspect of it is that I paid the money for my education, then it's my right. It becomes my right to know.
But how much did you pay? How much is education worth?
Well, it depends where.
No, but I'm just saying, real knowledge, what price is that worth?
No, real knowledge, of course.
But no, but I'm just saying, how much is knowledge actually worth?
A lot.
So are they paying that much in tuition? Even they pay $20,000 a year, or $50,000 a year, $100,000 a year. But some people with that same knowledge make millions. So why is it you're not paying millions if you think that you paid so much? You know, do they even think how much it costs to mow all those lawns? Right? 400 acres of lawns. You know how much that costs? You know? Like that. All those toilets, you know, all that, you know, all these different things. And they're just thinking, oh, because I paid money, so I own the teacher. So then, is it teacher-student relationship, or is it a business relationship?
Well, it's obvious business.
So if it's a business relationship, then the thing is have you paid enough? Like, I remember one businessman, I told that story. Devotee, businessman, he has this business, he has something, he sells cloth. And his friend sees the piece of cloth and he wants to buy it. He says, how much for this? You know, and he says, you know, 200 rupees. He says, no, I'll only pay, you know, I'll only give you 150. You know, he says, no, but I've already given you the reduced price. I sell this for 250. But because it's you, I'm giving it to you at no profit. So, you know, all expenses paid, it costs me 200. I'm giving it to you for 200. But he says, no, I won't pay more than 150. He says, take it for free, but I'm not taking 150 rupees. You either give me 200 or you give me nothing. You know? So the point is just because you paid money, you don't buy the person's soul. You don't buy their character and this and that. You can buy services. Yes, they can go there and go to the class, write some work on the board, say go home and study that, and come back tomorrow and I'll have a test. That they can do. But to actually put in their time and their money and their personality, that you can't pay for. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that it's everything's taken as cheap just because it's... So we have to be very, very careful about this. That we have to understand is that here in humility is that they'd like to know, but they also want to know if I'm qualified. Like that. You know, you must come across sometimes where somebody thinks because they ask the question, you have to answer it. You have to answer it the way they want it answered, but you don't. Okay. Is that, yeah.
It's always a question of perspective.
His perspective. That's why the Shastra gives the correct perspective. Then with that, then we look at things, then we start to see things in a different way, a different approach.
If we don't accept the Shastra, it's always a material problem.
Yes, always. And even you follow the Shastra, but it's not connected to Krishna, mechanically it'll work nicely, but it still can't satisfy the soul. Because the soul is eternal, and whatever you're doing with the Shastra that's not connected to Krishna, it will give a temporary result. And so even if it's perfect, even you had all the money you wanted, everything went the way you wanted, you still wouldn't be happy. Because it can't satisfy the soul. So that's why in the Vedic system is you follow the rules so things do go nicely, but you learn the knowledge about God so you know what to do when you figure out that this is all useless. When a living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he will give even his own self to the surrendered soul. Right, so what's more than God, right? You can't get better than that, right? So that's the thing, is one's being offered so much more, but what they're demanding is actually less. Sri Kavi answers this question in verses 23 to 43. Marjanimi asked in Navayogendra's question 4.11.4 of Srimad Bhagavatam, from 2.11.2.44. Marjanimi said, "Now please tell me in greater detail about the devotees of the Supreme Lord. What are the natural symptoms by which I can distinguish between the most advanced devotees, those on the middle level, and those who are neophytes? What are the typical religious activities of a Vaishnava, and how does he speak? Specifically, please describe these symptoms and characteristics by which Vaishnavas become dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Right, so now you see he's taking it through even farther. Right, so he wants to know what are the devotees, and then, you know, what are the proper activities? How do they behave? Right, because it's all a matter. It means you'll have the etiquette, you have the knowledge, but it has to be applied. That'll have a lifestyle. So, what is that lifestyle? We see Arjuna asked the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita. After he hears that there is such a thing as spiritual life, first thing he asks is, how does such a person act? How do they behave? And what characteristics or what they behave that make them dear to the Lord. Sri Javier answers this question in verses 45 through 55. So Javier answers this one. Kavi answers. I think he asks 9 questions. And for each question, one of the Navayogendras answers. So we see Kavi answers the first one, Javi answers the second one. And so it'll just go right after I've done all of them. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the second chapter, Vasudeva asked Narada questions. In response to King Nimi's question, Kavi and Javier spoke about Vaishnava principles. Shardarta Darshani 11.2.1. Greatly eager to see Lord Krishna, Devarshi Narada resided almost exclusively in Dwarka. Vasudeva, bewildered by the Lord's illusory potency, had previously offered worship to the Supreme Lord Ananta for the purpose of getting a son, but had failed to worship him for liberation. Once Narada arrived at the home of Vasudeva, who worshipped him according to proper etiquette, greeted him respectfully, and requested to hear about pure devotional service, which frees one from all kinds of fear. Narada praised Vasudeva's fixed intelligence and then related the ancient history of the conversation between the 9 Yogendras, who were sons of Lord Rishabdeva, and Nimi, the king of Videha. Oh. Is Rishabdeva the ones with the 100 sons? Yeah, and then 9 were Paramahamsas, so the Navayogendras are the Paramahamsas. Oh, okay. Some connection there. Okay, they were sons of Lord Rishabdeva and Nimi, the king of Videha. Swayambhuva Manu's son was Priyavrata. His son was Agnidra, whose son was Nabhi. Lord Rishabdev, the plenary portion of Vasudev, incarnated as the son of Nabhi. The oldest of Rishabdev's 100 sons was Bharata, an exalted devotee of Narayana, by whose name this earth, previously called Ajanabha Varsha, became famous as Bharat Varsha. 9 other sons of Rishabdev were widely known as the Navayogendras. Right? happen. Kavi, Javier, Antariksha, Prabuddha, Pipalayana, Avihotra, Drumila, Chamasa, and Karabhajana. They were well versed in knowledge of the self, fixed in their goal, and always striving for perfection. Nine other sons of Rishabdev took on the duty of Kshatriyas and became masters of the nine dweeps comprising Bharatvarsha. His other 81 sons became brahmanas, expert in Smriti doctrines, who propagated the path of fruitive sacrifice. The nine yogendras, free to move without impediment, traveled everywhere as they wished. They were direct associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Madhusudana, and wandered freely to give protection to the various planets in the universe. The human body can be lost at any moment, but it is still a very rare attainment. Still rare is to get the association of the confidential devotees of the Lord of Vaikuntha while in this very human body. The association of such saintly persons, even for a fraction of a second, bestows all benefits on a living being. Therefore, King Nimi offered the nine yogendras suitable seats, worshipped them, humbled himself with obeisances, and joyfully inquired from them about Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma, or pure devotional service to the Lord, is the only means of ultimate good fortune for the soul. The Supreme Lord, being pleased by such service, offers his own self to the devotee. In answer to the king's question, one of the nine yogendras, Kavi, spoke as follows. Those means of advancement which are described by the Personality of Godhead himself, and which enable even foolish persons easily to achieve perfect self-realization, are called Bhagavad Dharma. Right? So, Bhagavad Dharma is that which is given by the Lord himself. It's about the Lord, but it's given by the Lord. And it's so, and it allows anyone to take part, because it's directed towards the soul. Right? Because other things would require special material abilities. But this is, there's no special abilities. One simply, your qualification is that there's a soul there. You know, if you have a rock that doesn't have a soul in it, then it won't work for them. Right? So it's those who are foolish means those who have taken up the material, not that we're talking about they have to be, not very intelligent on the material platform. It means that those who have given up devotional service or haven't taken up devotional service, even they can follow. It's so simple and straightforward. So that's the whole point. It's very direct. It's given by the Lord itself. Yes? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.